Good morning and welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you, like me, who know that there's something dreadfully wrong, destructive, about the religious, political, media, and military influences on our society. We're among those who said that no, we don't want to bomb Syria. For the first time in a very long time, Americans have stood up to the president and not rallied around the flag when he called for arms. We all realize that the institutions that are purported to be part of the solution are actually the cause of the problem. So instead of merely presenting the news here on this program, our mission is to understand who is causing these tragedies, why they are causing these tragedies, all while predicting how these events will influence our world. And while that doesn't provide much hope, but it does provide great insight and perspective, in our second hour, we are going to discuss hope. We're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, not the least bit religious here. In fact, we will impugn religion throughout that discussion. We're just going to look at His words, what He had to say, what He is offering, and determine whether or not it appears credible to you. Words wielded wisely provide the answer for almost everything that ails us, from economic ruin to terrorism, from religious myths to political hypocrisy, indeed also to life in the covenant. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, toll free 877-300-7645. Yesterday we ended the first hour of our program talking about the device that was used to fling the sarin gas into the suburb of Damascus that caused the deaths of some unknown number of Syrians. And what we talked about was the fact that it is been determined by the United Nations that it was a variant of the M14 artillery rocket. Now, the reason that this is important, and the reason I'm just not letting this go, even though the President of the United States has been thwarted from his desire to engage America in yet another war, is because it is a reality, ladies and gentlemen, that we came within a whisper of beginning World War III, of essentially annihilating life on this planet. I mean, just within a whisper. Had it not been for the two-thirds of Americans that said, no, we're not buying into it this time. You lied to us last time. And everything you've done in that part of the world has turned into a disaster. No, we're not going to support this. And then, even then, he was going to override the will of two-thirds of the American people. And he was going to begin World War III. And had it not been for Putin, you know, a fascist dictatorial thug, right now today, we would be engaged in World War III. And because we came so close, we ought not just turn the page and say, okay, well, Putin saved the world, and let's move on. It's important to examine what we can learn so that we learn that we ought not ever trust an American politician under any circumstances. They lied to us regarding the cause of 9/11. They lied to us about the justifications for invading Afghanistan. They lied to us about the justifications for invading Iraq. They made both of those situations hugely worse. Suicidal moves for the United States. And everything we have done in the Islamic world since that time has been based on lies and has been counterproductive. You can't have a zero batting average and have it all be coincidence. So let's consider the M14 artillery rocket. If you go to Wikipedia's site and you just Google armaments of Syria, you'll find a link very high on the page that provides a complete listing of all of the weapon systems that the Syrian government has at its disposal. You will not find something that just appears as a M14 artillery rocket. You're going to have to do some digging, and the reason for that is that it's obsolete. But you can find it, and then you can click on the closest variant to it, and you will see, yep, there used to be a weapon delivery system called an M-14 artillery rocket. It was designed by the Soviet Union in 1951. It was decommissioned in 1990. That's 23 years ago. It was, however, used by the Taliban in the Afghani war against Americans. The Taliban announced about 6 months ago that it was sending its jihadists and their weapon systems into the Syrian conflict. Now, this particular weapon system, the reason that it is no longer used is twofold. One is the rockets themselves are tiny. I mean, we're not dealing with here, you know, America's used to Saturn V, I mean, rocket. We're used to intercontinental ballistic missiles, you know. These things are 6 feet in diameter and hundreds of feet tall. No, these are 2 to 3 feet long and maybe 6 inches wide. They're tiny. They're also unguided. This is a weapon that the best you can do is point the trailer is typically towing it, or in the jihadi applications where they put them in the back of pickup trucks, you have to position your pickup truck so that you think that it is pointing either towards or away from the target, depending on which way you have the rocket launcher set in the truck. That's how guided this thing is. I mean, this is the, in fact, we're going to talk about a video of what was probably the source of the sarin gas in the back of a truck. The best you can do in this case is to hope that you have positioned your truck in the street or driveway or parking lot or sand dune so that you think it might be pointing in the right direction. That's it. There's no GPS here. And the very notion that after hundreds of refusals to use chemical weapons, all of which have been not only recorded by the Germans, but also by the Americans, of course, even by the Israelis, and with all of those saying, no, you may not use chemical weapons, this notion that Assad said, oh, yeah, what the heck, let's use them this time. I know I've said no hundreds of times before, but let's use them this time, even though there's no recording of him changing his mind. Let's use them this time. And what I want to do is I want the launcher to be on one side of my home, and I want the target to be on the other side. Yeah, and I want you to use it. A device that we took out of service years ago because it was so ineffective as it relates to its ability to target. Yeah, I want a no guidance system delivery of poisonous sarin gas 2 to 3 miles from my home. Yeah, that would be really what I. That's perfect. Let's go do that. Now, if you think that's what happened, then you are a believer. You can sign yourself right up and put yourself right beside the President of the United States and say, yep, I'm gullible.
I think the worst part is that is what the President believes. Like, that's what he said.
Well, he doesn't believe it because he knows, because he is saying multiple times that that Assad himself made the decision to gas his own people, and that any leader that would choose to gas his own people does have no right to lead a country. And we know for certain that Assad did not make that decision. And so he knows for certain that what he's saying is untrue. Does he know that it's all untrue or just mostly untrue? We don't know that. So your point is valid there. But I will also tell you, Scott, to your point, most megalomaniacs, and this man has a messianic complex, most messianic complex individuals, they view themselves as so superior to the rest of the world that they actually begin to view their statements as being truth. Paul, the author of half the Christian New Testament, falls into this category. They begin knowing full well that they're lying. But very early in the process, they get so unified, so incorporated into their own lie, that it's possible that they actually trick their own minds to saying, well, if I said it and I'm the savior of the world, therefore it must be true.
I also like the fact that he said, you know, any leader that's willing to kill his own people isn't fit to lead. I believe
that's
the statement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, what's he think he's going to do to his own people if he sends them into Syria? That's him sending his own people to die.
Of course. That's why I was so distraught over George Bush, because he sent Americans into Afghanistan and to Iraq based on lies, and 10,000 Americans died, 100,000 Americans came back mutilated, and scores of Americans take their lives suicidally every month based upon the idiocy of what he sent them in to do. I called it murder. I mean, it's certainly premeditated and leads to the death of your own citizens based upon false premise. So I would agree. He is. Exactly that. You know, the fellow that started the website that we now called Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, Alaki, he was an American citizen. So was his son. This man sent drones to murder him. Now, here's an interesting report that appeared the morning that the it was announced that that the M-14, which is a 140-millimeter artillery rocket, was used in the attack. It says the UN report identifies the 140-millimeter M-14, a variant of it, actually, in the chemical attack. When the story of the attack was first published, the New York Times immediately provided a link to Amr Moussa's video on YouTube, claiming to be a recording of the attack. The video was actually showing rockets being fired, and it was a similar size rocket, in fact, a variant of the M-14, one that they cut off on a number of the tubes. I think they took it down to 9 tubes as opposed to 12 tubes, so they would fit in the back of a mid-size pickup truck. But the video is actually showing rockets being fired by the rebels in Ghouta, which is the community that was gassed. We'll return to that thought when Shattering Myths returns after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is a video that I'm discussing. I watched. It's about 10 minutes long. It shows a Toyota pickup truck with 9 of the standard 16 tubes that are part of the outdated, obsolete M-14 rocket system. And it's a rocket system of an artillery style, because it is breech loading as opposed to a mortar, where you drop the projectile down through the top of the tube. And it was obvious that those who were firing the rockets, and they were firing them one at a time, but many of them during this video, 10 minutes, you know, they probably fired a rocket every 60 seconds over the 10 minutes, about 10 rockets. All of the M14 140 millimeter size, and each time they would fire them, not only they but the group surrounding them would scream Allahu Akbar. They were clearly rebels. They were not army units, and the delivery of advice was, as I say, a stripped down version of this sitting in the back of the pickup truck. Now, the reason that this is interesting, beyond the fact that it is the rebels who are using the M14 artillery rockets, and that they were used in Afghanistan by the Taliban, and the Taliban 6 months ago announced that they were bringing weaponry into the Syrian conflict, is that this particular video was shot and uploaded about an hour and a half before the world got news of the attack. It was shot at the same time that the attack was actually perpetrated, and about an hour and a half to 2 hours before word got out that people were dying in the suburbs of Damascus of a poisonous gas attack, this video had already been loaded on the web. It shows the attack, and it was by the rebels. The story here reads, other investigators pointed out that the video of the launching of the rocket was a part of a rebel group firing the rocket and of them documenting what they were doing. The title of the video, moreover, suggests that they were firing chemical weapons at Assad's agents. At least that's what they thought they were doing. The timing of the video is also of interest. The video was uploaded before the news of the attack broke out. How could they have known that the rocket pictured was carrying a chemical warhead? Unless they were part of the jihadi that were firing them. Amir Moussa's original account on YouTube was conveniently terminated shortly thereafter. The YouTube said the account has been terminated due to repeated severe violations of our community guidelines and our claims of copyright infringement. In other words, the U.S. government didn't like the evidence that showed that it was the rebels that had gassed their own people and said, take it down. Now, as is the case with the web, it's very difficult to remove something like that because other people who have a conscience will copy it and they will post it on clouds throughout the world. So, that's the story. And this one even concludes with that the launching device as a BM-14 was the favorite weapon of the Taliban in Afghanistan. Speaking of not telling the truth, we have hinted at this before, but here's the story. Kerry's Syria source was bounced over a padded resume. Her name was Elizabeth Obagi. She wrote a Wall Street Journal editorial that Secretary of State John Kerry and Senator John McClown, the Republican senator from Arizona, cited as proof that the Syrian opposition had not been heavily infiltrated by al-Qaeda. So that was their justifications. They said, oh, yeah, this editorial in the Wall Street Journal coming out of the Institute for the Study of War, written by a PhD who is expert on such subjects, has demonstrated that the preponderance of those in the Syrian opposition are not infiltrated by al-Qaeda. And I remember we've actually played John McClown's interview with Fox, where he made that statement, quoting the author, and then also added that Allahu Akbar was like saying, thank God. Well, it turns out that Ms. Obagi not only padded her credentials, she didn't even enroll in a PhD program. And it turns out that she was actually funded by the jihadi groups that were seeking weapons. She lied about everything, including her doctorate, including her credentials, including telling the truth. But have you heard an apology, an admission from Kerry or Senator John McClown that, oops, we goofed, the one source we could quote turned out to be disingenuous? Maybe we ought not bomb Syria? I'd like to turn to the story of Elizabeth Obagi because she is just so part and parcel of this whole mythology of the United States' foreign policy and how there is no compunction against lying. There's absolutely no concern whatsoever of deceiving the American people, even when such deception gets America into another war. You know, it's what happened with the Gulf of Tonkin incident that started the Vietnam War. It was a lie. It never happened. It's like the sinking of the Maine as it relates to the Spanish-American War. The Spanish didn't sink the Maine. It's like the sinking of the Lusitania, which got America into World War I. It was set up to be sunk by the leaders of our government. You know, it's this notion that that Americans have been duped for so many decades into supporting wars that were based on lies. But finally, 60% of Americans, almost 70% of Americans, woke up and said, don't do that to me again, because you lied to me about Afghanistan. You lied to me about Iraq, and you made those situations worse. You lied to me about what was really happening in Egypt and Tunisia. You know, I've just had it. Well, this Elizabeth Bagby story is a great example of that. This is Dateline Washington. Elizabeth Obagi, a pro-Syrian opposition analyst whose credibility has come under fire, might have even more explaining to do. As court documents show, she once vouched for a rebel group whose website displayed extremist anti-American images. Yeah, the pictures that are shown on their website is them holding AK-47s behind a burning U.S. Capitol. So you might say that would be an anti-American image. Obagi was fired by the Institute for the Study of War about lying about her academic credentials. Her writings had been used by U.S. officials to bolster their case for military action against the Assad regime. So since they had no credible proof, the Secretary of State of the United States and the most pro-war senator chose to usurp the lies of a individual who had absolutely no credibility, all to justify America's invasion of yet another country. Obagi discussed the rebel group in question in a June 19, 2013, that's just a couple of months ago, signed affidavit filed in the case of American Eric Haroun, who was indicted for fighting alongside the terrorist group, the al-Nusra, in Syria. Obagi signed a declaration which included a breakdown of rebel groups and their varying degrees of affiliation to al-Qaeda terrorists, which was used in Haroun's defense to argue that the former army medic had actually fought with a splinter group and not a terrorist one, a group tied to one of Obagi's supporters. In the document, Obagi said that she had reviewed the apparent Facebook page for the Al-Aqsa's Islamic Brigades and found no signs of jihadist leanings. Oh, yes, today. In today's world, you become an expert by examining the Facebook page. Yes, indeedy. We have really fallen into the gutter. And in viewing this Facebook page, which, by the way, shows pictures of them burning the U.S. Capitol while holding AK-47s in their arms, their faces enraged. Just look at the name of the organization. It is Al-Aqsa, which is the Islamic assault on Jerusalem and Israel against Jews. Al-Aqsa is the furthest mosque. It is the name that is used in the Quran to describe the ultimate Muslim conquest of Israel. It's the one built on the Temple Mount. Now, they call themselves the Al-Aqsa Islamic Brigades, but they're not an Islamic jihadist group, according to this brilliant expert, even though brigades is the one of three terms that these clowns use when they go about their jihadist business. Jihadi, Mujahideen, and brigade are the three terms that they use. All right, so going further, she says, quote, I have reviewed a Facebook site that purports to be associated with the Aska Islamic Brigades, she stated in the affidavit, putting Islamic, by the way, in a parenthetical and taking brigades and making it lowercase as if it was a descriptive term. The Facebook site does not appear to be particularly jihadist in orientation and posts videos associated with groups that are still affiliated with the Free Syrian Army. What did we learn about the Free Syrian Army, old Senator McClown's pals, yesterday? Didn't the Free Syrian Army yesterday say that they would not associate themselves with the coalition, the national coalition that America was supporting? And that they said that we, by affidavit, that we only will unite under Islamic principles and that our only guidance will be Sharia? Oops. Yet images from the group's Facebook page depict otherwise, including one that shows the U.S. Capitol being engulfed in flames and armed fighters marching in the foreground. Other images show the black and white flag, which is the flag, according to the Quran and Hadith, of an Islamic jihadi raid. Obagi, a Georgetown University alumnus, was put in the media spotlight following an op-ed piece that she wrote for the Wall Street Journal, which was cited by Secretary of State John Kerry and Senator John McCain, Republican of Arizona, in their case for military strikes against Syria. Once again, the United States government is justifying invasions, attacking other countries on lies, known lies. Specifically, Kerry read a quote from the op-ed in which he wrote that the Islamic extremist factions are not spearheading the fight against the Syrian government, but rather that the struggle is being led by moderate opposition forces. He knew it was untrue. He cited it as evidence. It was one person's propagandist positioning. The woman that wrote it knew it was untrue. She was being paid to write it. The U.S. government knew it was untrue. And now we have absolute proof that it is untrue based upon the news that came out from the jihadists, the 11 largest jihadist fighting units, including the Free Syrian Army and al-Nusra Front in Syria, which they said, we will only unite under Islamic principles, and the only law that we will consider appropriate is Sharia. Since then, Obagi has appeared on multiple news outlets, including Fox News, CNN, and NPR, to discuss Syria. She has weighed in on complicated ethnic and religious challenges in the region as a complete and utter fraud. The media is happy to tell you lies. So long as the lies are politically correct, they will lap them up as if they were Kool-Aid. Her credibility and objectivity came into question over her work with a Syrian opposition group called the Syrian Emergency Task Force, which is a group that is begging the West for more weapons. The journal, after the op-ed piece was first published, included a clarification noting that she is affiliated with that group, and the organization subcontracts with the U.S. and British governments to provide aid, read weapons, to the Syrian opposition. The D.C.-based scholar was fired last week by the Institute for the Study of War for allegedly lying about her educational credentials. There is no allegedly here. The Institute posted a statement. This is the Institute for the Study of War, posted a statement on its website claiming that she misled the organization about having a Ph.D. Then they wrote, she reportedly claims that she had defended her dissertation but was waiting for the degree. When she got caught, that was her answer, that she had defended her dissertation and was just waiting for the degree. It was just an issue of timing. Well, guess what appeared in the press 2 days later? Embattled Syria analyst Elizabeth Obagi now admits that she never even enrolled in a Ph.D. program, despite claims to the contrary. She rose and she quickly fell as a prominent scholar whose writings were used to make the case for military intervention in Syria. You know, I pay pretty close attention to the news. I don't recall Senator John McCown or Secretary of State Lurch telling the American people that, oh, by the way, the justifications we cited for bombing Syria, which would have started World War III, which would have aided and abetted fundamentalist Muslims in their assault of that country, Muslims who are cutting off the heads of Christians, that the information we cited to justify that invasion was completely erroneous. Do you recall them saying that? No, I don't. Sorry, liars lie, and then all they do is continue to lie. Well, speaking of deceptions, this is an amazing story. It's been reported in the mainstream press, but my guess is that most people really haven't considered its implications. Mullah Abdul Ghani Bahadur, who is the co-founder of the Taliban, well, he's been freed from a jail in Pakistan. The Afghani government welcomed the move. In fact, it was the Afghani government that asked for the co-founder of the Taliban to be freed. Mullah Bahadur is one of four men who founded the Taliban movement in Afghanistan in 1994. He became a linchpin of the insurgency after the Taliban was toppled by U.S.-led the U.S.-led invasion in 2001. Yeah, what we did is we went in and we shock and awe, normal American fashion, and we went down and started hunting Taliban, particularly in Kandahar, and we ousted them from political control of the country. We established a puppet government, which is arguably the most corrupt on the planet. Since that time, as American troops withdraw, the Taliban returns. And, of course, they take their pound of flesh all the way along. But during the period where Americans were just being murdered for absolutely no reason, because the moment we leave Afghanistan, it will be as if we were never there. In fact, the same cast of characters will be in control of that country. But the guy that was spearheading the coordinated attacks on Americans is Mullah Baradar. He was just released from prison. Now, mind you, it was the Americans who captured him. And the Americans who captured him who turned him over to the Pakistanis. But the Pakistanis have a very warm spot in their heart for the Taliban, because the actual founder of the Taliban is the Pakistani government. It's ISI. It's version of the CIA, which in Pakistan reports to the military. He's now a free man. He is in Afghanistan. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This story about Mullah Baradar being released from prison at the behest of the Afghani government by the Pakistani government, recognizing that he was the co-founder of the Taliban, that he was the principal actor responsible for the coordinated attacks of the Taliban against U.S. troops over the last 12 years, that he still runs the military operations, militant operations, if you will, of the Taliban, which a couple of days ago not only killed more Americans and Brits, but has murdered tens of thousands of Afghanis. This fellow was captured in the Pakistani city of Karachi, showing the affinity of the Taliban and Pakistani government. He was released, of course, by the Pakistani government. The United States claims that Pakistan is an ally in the war against terror. Now, can you explain to me how you would go to the mother and father of a Marine who was sent to Afghanistan to go fight against the Taliban, and that he lost his life in a battle to the Taliban, only to have the United States go along with the release of the co-founder of the Taliban, who coordinated that attack so that he could go back to Afghanistan, but your son can never come back? Think about the betrayal there. It's rather stunning. Of course, the United States is negotiating with the Taliban, trying to find a way to have, what would we call it in Vietnam, peace with honor. Wasn't that it? Peace with honor. Henry Kissinger was negotiating with the North Vietnamese. And, of course, the North Vietnamese, being communists, they say they'd promised America anything. Sure, you leave and we'll leave the South alone, no problem. And, of course, within 2 weeks, it was all over. It was as if America had never been there except for the blood of 60,000 Americans. Well, the same thing is true with Afghanistan. And we are complicit here in releasing the co-founder of the Taliban back into Afghanistan. It's the hypocrisy of it, the immorality of it. When you consider the carnage, the spilled blood and coin, and that this is the ultimate outcome of it, I'm almost speechless as to how we can do this kind of thing and still have Americans say, let's support the military. Now, I understand that the boys and girls who were sent over there and who died, that it is a tragedy for them and it's a tragedy for their parents. But let's not pretend that they were accomplished something worthwhile, that they were fighting for America's liberty or they were serving this country. That's just not the case. They were serving immoral, irrational, despicable leaders. And it is those same immoral, despicable, and irrational leaders who are calling us to war once again. The interesting thing, this particular article that talks about this release says that The BBC's Alim Makbul in Islamabad says that releasing one of the founders of the Taliban and mastermind of the Afghan insurgency would seem a counterproductive step for the Kabul government and the U.S.-led coalition. Well, it's not a bad step for the Kabul government. Of course, it's disastrous for the U.S.-led coalition. The reason it's not a bad step for the U.S.-led for the Kabul government is that they began to all announce individually their loyalty to the Taliban quite some time ago. They have acquiesced to all of the Taliban's demands. They've established a constitution that is approved by the Taliban. And the reason they have done so is they know that the Taliban will be in total control of Afghanistan within a year's time. And as a result of that, they know that if they don't embrace the return of the Taliban, they will be killed. But if they do embrace the return of the Taliban, then they will likely be left alone. They'll probably have to go into exile, but they'll be able to go out with their confiscated riches. And so what is actually happening here is that the Afghani government, the puppet government we put in place, is avoiding what happened in Vietnam. They're ushering the Taliban back into power so that they won't have to be airlifted out, so that they will be able to go on with their lives because they know that it is inevitable. Along these lines, just one last thought. A former Afghan senator and district governor has announced his defection to the Taliban. This just happened last week. His name is Qazi Abdul Hai, and he has served in the Afghani government as a leading politician over the years. He has done what so many others are doing, making a public declaration that he is Taliban. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment.